on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our, Thursday? It's Thursday. Yeah, December 19th, 2024 edition. The days, you know, this time of year kind of all blend together. I know myself, I still haven't finished my Christmas shopping. So don't feel bad if you haven't either. It's just one of those years. It's been a crazy year, I think, for everybody. And, you know, thankfully for everybody, New Year's begins in just 13 days. 13 days. Yeah, less than 2 weeks left in the calendar year of 2024. And as usual, we are here to help give you some insights, some data, and some perspective so you can make better decisions with your money. I am Justin Klein, and I'm here for you. I am a resource for you at any time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call, leave your question, and myself or Luke will answer it on a future show. But we love your live calls as well. Those really really bring some juice to the show. So we encourage you to reach out and give us a call 4 to 5 Pacific time as well. Now, in just a bit, we will talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question first.
Hi, guys. This is Brian from Ocala, Florida. Merry Christmas. Can you do a quick review of Danaher Corporation, DHR? That's David Harry Railroad. Thank you.
All right. Looking at Danaher, and they manufacture and market professional, medical, industrial, commercial, and commercial products and services worldwide. This is historically one of those very, very well-run companies. It's very profitable. They have a model where they made a lot of small acquisitions, and they'd always really knock it out of the park to turn themselves into a highly profitable business. The issue is that over time, I think that skill eroded. Because if you look at profitability, return equity is now at a 20-year low around 7.5%. Return on invested capital, 5.5%. Now, good balance sheet, minimal debt compared to its market cap of $163 billion, $5 billion in free cash flow, which, you know, based on the current market cap, that's, you know, about a 3% free cash flow yield. Not amazing there. And enterprise value to EBITDA is around 25, which to me is a bit high. And historically, it's cheaper when it's closer to high single digits, okay, as opposed to, 25 that it's at now. And the technicals are poor. Okay, it's peaked out back in, what was that, August, $280 per share, roughly. Now it's at $226, and at a new low for the year almost. It's almost back to where we started the year. So the technicals are poor. I don't like the multiples that it's trading at. Trading at 31 times earnings, and earnings this year are supposed to fall 2% and only go up 11% next year. But even those estimates are coming down. So it's a name that's always been interesting to me, but it's trading at a too premium valuation. I think it needs to come in dramatically. If this can get back down to, you know, say 150 or so, that would be an area that would be interesting to me for Danaher. But it's at 226. So it's just a lot more downside potential to come, and I would pass on it until it gets around the 150 level. Thanks for the call. Now, let's go take a live call. You know we love these live calls. Sid from North Carolina asking about Nike.
Hi, Justin. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I do have this in my both the account, regular tax account and Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. I picked up at somewhere around 90 when the price was, but last two, three quarters, including today's results, are like kind of a sideways or going down, mainly due to China and other factors. So I'm right now at a break-even point, no profit, no loss, but like to take your opinion, whether should I hold it, buy more, if there is an opportunity, what do you think should be the long-term strategy? And once again, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. That was the name that we did start picking up for clients after the washout in July time period. We bought it around in the low 70s. It bounced up to the high 80s, and now it's back around the high 70s. So, and it did have earnings and after hours. It moved up initially about 10%, but it gave most of that back. Now it's only up about 0.5% after hours. It did have earnings, and the earnings were mixed. You know, they're still struggling to a degree, but you know, new leadership seems to know where to focus, which is refocusing on the athlete and bringing quality products to the athlete that enhance their performance. And I think that is a much better path forward than what Phil Donahue, if I remember correctly, is the previous CEO. And he was more of the, you know, from, I think he was from Bain & Company, one of those consultant firms. And you know, you never want to see companies focus just simply on the bottom line. I think that's really becomes a problem, especially for consumer-focused brands, when you know it's really about brand identity and investing in things that have long-term payoffs. And I think Nike struggled with that for a long time. I think this new CEO has the right frame of mind to bring Nike back to its strengths. And we think that at these prices, it is a good value down here. So we like Nike, still $7 billion in free cash flow and a market cap of about 115 billion. So you're talking about a 6.5% free cash flow yield. To us, that's very attractive for this type of name. It usually never trades this cheap. At least it hasn't for the last a decade or so. So we think this is still a great brand longer term, just needs new leadership. And that will take a little bit of time, I think, to bear fruit. But the fact that, you know, it didn't go down on this earnings announcement, it tells you a lot about how washed out the sentiment is. So I still think Nike is a great buy, you know, in this in the 70s or a bit lower. So we like Nike. Thanks for the call. Now we're going to a short break, and on the other side, I'll preview today's topics and talk about today's market activity. But please remember that you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestDoc Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 40 minutes or so, and our main focus point is concerning this topic. Expert tips for saving money during the holiday season. We know this is a time where it's really easy to be freewheeling and really break the bank. But there are strategies to set the right frame of mind, just like there is in the investing world, to make better decisions and prevent you from indulging too much in holiday shopping. So we'll look at that story. In addition, we will cover a few other things. The Chinese auto market. Well, a lot of big names are pulling back from that market, and we'll talk about why that is. And then I think an even more important topic will be liquidity. Understanding this is vital. So many people get caught up in headlines, but in reality, liquidity dynamics will move markets far more in the short term than anything else. So we'll look at kind of ways to think about tracking those liquidity numbers, okay? So that's what's on the docket. In addition to your voice bank calls that we have lined up, and then questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now, as always, at 888-99-CHART. Let's take a quick look at the market today. It was, we had the bloody day yesterday, post-Fed meeting. And today was a bit more mixed. In fact, you had the Dow actually eke out a gain of 15 points, 0.4%. The NASDAQ, that was down 20 points, about 0.1%. The S&P down 5 points, also down about 0.1%. You had NVIDIA, that was up a little bit. That was the biggest contributor to the gains in the positive aspect of the market. Apple, Amazon, and Apple, Amazon were up. J.P. Morgan, Visa, Netflix, those were kind of the winners. Broadcom, that was down again about 2%, giving back a good amount of its gains from its recent bump. Micron down a little bit, Tesla down about 4 points. United Healthcare continues to just suffer after the assassination of its CEO. So the healthcare space in general is just struggling overall. And if you look at a heat map, there it was really a mixed bag. And so this is what I will say: I still think that generally for the next week or so, the path of least resistance is to the upside. However, yesterday was a change in character. I didn't expect it to happen this soon. I expected volatility to start to creep up more in the new year. And I still think that in earnest, volatility will creep up in the new year. So I do expect after, you know, kind of the first few trading days of January, for that volatility that you started to see yesterday really take hold in earnest. And so that's my assessment here. The Fed being more hawkish is certainly an important milestone. And the fact that Bitcoin is now down to, let's see, what are we at? 97,000. That's a pretty big reversal, massive reversal in Bitcoin. And Bitcoin tends to be a leading indicator here, okay? And if this breaks below kind of the 91,000 mark, that would be a clear indicator that inflation or the liquidity is inflecting negatively in a much larger way. And so you likely will see that the mega caps lead to the downside, just as they led to the upside. So we'll see if we get a continued follow through there. Like I said, today was more of a mixed bag, where you had Microsoft down a little bit, Google was flat, Amazon, NVIDIA, and Apple were up, but Tesla and Broadcom were down, and AMD continued to be down to 2%. And so, we'll see how much more follow through we get, kind of as we get into 2025. But we're starting to get into the more boring days. There aren't many exciting economic numbers that are on the docket for us. Let's see, what do we have tomorrow? Tomorrow we do have some inflation data, the PCE, that will be somewhat important. But after that, you get into next week and that's holiday. You have some durable goods orders on Christmas Eve, Thursday. You have some the jobless claims as usual, but that's about it. Those are the weekly ones, so that doesn't really matter. So tomorrow is really the only news that could move markets between really now and year end. There isn't really much that's going to shift the expectation of Fed policy beyond this PCE number that we're getting tomorrow. So that's kind of where we're at with markets. And with that said, let's pivot over to a question that came in. Actually, no, we're going to be moving to a quick break. But still to come, my focus point, which is about how to save money in this holiday season. and more answers to your questions. And of course, most importantly, your live calls. We already had one. We always encourage those, so don't hesitate to pick up the phone and give me a call right now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke?
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds.
You're the best person to ask it.
Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
The symbol is UNIT. Wondering what you thought about this REIT, if it would be a good time to get in.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
So I was thinking, is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR. If you could run that down for me.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Christmas is almost here, and on the chance that Santa's too busy to submit your finance and investment questions to Justin and Luke, maybe you should do that now. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now I'll get to my main focus point in a few minutes, but first let's take another live call. Abby Sheen from the Bay Area asking about Micron, listening on AM 1220.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Really appreciate the details you share.
No problem.
So this is regarding Micron. They had an earnings call yesterday where they gave a lighter forecast than the estimates. And it seems like they are 52-week loss on the lower side, knowing that, you know, there would be might be some policy change coming from Trump. What do you think in an investment right now, taking position in the Micron stock?
We like Micron. It's about $100 billion market cap. And earnings do tend to be volatile, but earnings are expected to be $7.65 next year and $11.57 the year after. Now, those estimates are coming down, but it's an $87 stock. So you're talking about forward-looking multiples still in the low single digits. And what do? Is they make memory. And we know that with the rise of artificial intelligence and the data centers, the demand for their type of chips will continue to power higher. And so we like Micron, and yeah, it's moved down. It's not quite a 52-week low. It's near support where it bottomed back in July and August, around $85 per share. So we like it. Good balance sheet, good cash flow. Historically, it's a very volatile name. So you just have to be very comfortable with that volatility because, you know, it can easily go from 87 all the way to maybe 50 or 60, but it could easily also go back to 150, which it was trading back in June. So if those earnings estimates of $11 plus are accurate by end of 2026, then I think this is a very cheap name.
Yeah, thank you for the information. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Our main focus point today concerns this topic, expert tips for saving money during the holiday season. Now, as the holiday season approaches, there are some valuable strategies to keep in mind so that you are you're making consistently smart decisions with your money and you're not getting derailed by the holiday season. Now, the National Retail Federation estimates consumer spending could hit as high as $989 billion during this holiday season, about a 3.5% increase from last year. But only 23% of consumers have a positive view of the economy. That's because many are heavily in debt and don't have a substantial savings pile. 74% say they were concerned with the cost of food and consumer goods. And so inflation is certainly adding to the pressure there. And people owe a lot of money on credit cards. So the data compiled by the Motley Fool has the average debt, excluding mortgages, for the average consumer at $22,700. Okay, so that's a lot, right? That's something that can weigh on you, especially when you're in this interest environment. You're paying heavy interest on that, and so it's important not to get into that situation and to, as with everything, bring moderation to the table. Okay. So when you're buying gifts, the first thing is, we all know most people, they love the sentimental gift over the expensive gift. So try to focus on those type of gifts versus breaking the bank. And one way to do that is to set a budget. How much you're going to spend on each person, and make sure that aligns with your total budget for the full year. A lot of people can have great budgets throughout the year and then break the bank in during the holiday season, especially because the setting of the holidays just makes it easy to spend. And that's why staying out of the stores oftentimes is a good thing. You know, there's a lot of holiday music, decorations, very festive. It's designed to keep you there, make you feeling good, spending more money. So make your list, check it twice, and maybe do your shopping at home where you can have access to more coupons online, rewards, etc. So you get some more money back in your pocket. Okay. And especially when it comes to types of gifts, the children, which most people are spending on, they value quality time. So, you know, one time things like taking them just out to eat, out to an event, out to a theme park, something like that, that can often be a much better way to really handle those gifts. Okay. And then focus a lot on not breaking the bank on other types of holiday events, right? Holiday parties. So, you know, is it new dresses? Is it new clothes? Travel expenses, et cetera. Oftentimes those can cost even more than your typical gift that you're giving. And so that's a side expense of the holidays that most people don't realize, is when you do have these events, can be expensive to attend them. So make sure you're picking the right ones, because we all have a full calendar usually. Make sure you're picking the ones that maybe are a little more cost effective. Okay. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this headline. China sees record $45.7 billion capital outflows in November. And China's capital markets experienced a record net outflow of $45.7 billion. Just in the month of November, marking the largest monthly deficit in history. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein and ready to take your calls on 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds. Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's face it, InvestTalk listeners, life can be unpredictable, but securing your family's financial future doesn't have to be. That's where Fabric by Gerber Life comes in. Fabric offers modern, flexible term life insurance designed to fit your lifestyle. Whether you're planning for the future or just want a little extra peace of mind, Fabric makes protecting what matters most simple and stress-free. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right from your couch, all online and on your schedule. You could be covered in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. If you got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Even if you have life insurance through your employer, it may not offer enough protection for your family, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. Fabric has flexible, high-quality policies that fit your family and your budget. Like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Fabric has partnered with Gerber Life, trusted by millions of families like yours for over 50 years. There's no risk, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/investtalk. That's meetfabric.com/investtalk. meetfabric.com/investtalk. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more,
saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
InvestTalk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, InvestTalk. I was hoping you guys could provide more background data on running a covered call. I see mixed things when I go online and do some research myself. I see that in the long run, it can provide less volatility overall and even slightly higher returns. But I've also seen how it can provide less returns. And I'm not sure if that's just in the short term. I'm also curious if the statements I've already said apply to covered calls on an index like the S&P, where you'd get different performance if you were doing it on individual stocks. Now, you guys obviously run covered calls for your clients. So I'm also curious if this is something more for people who are closer to retirement. It sounds like that's who you guys run the strategy for in my 20s. So I'm just curious what you guys think on that as well. And I'll listen on the show. Thanks.
I love this question, because cover calls have become a very popular strategy, and there's a lot of ETFs that are out there running these cover calls, and it might look like they have huge dividends and things like that. And a lot of people see this as a panacea. It sounds great. And it's, in many ways it is, but it's not a panacea. It's not a perfect strategy, just like nothing's a perfect strategy, right? What you said at the beginning, though, is correct. It lowers risk, and over time has typically slightly better returns. Now, it depends on what you're talking about, but that's generally the case. But that's over longer periods. And what that tells you is that you have better risk-adjusted returns. Okay, better risk-adjusted returns. And that's how you have to always think about everything. It's not total return. It's what type of risk that you're taking to get that return. Because every asset class or strategy has a certain level of volatility. And some people can handle that volatility and some people can't. If you're in a strategy that does very well long-term but has very high volatility and you get out because during one of those bouts of volatility, because you just freak out, you can't handle it, then it doesn't matter what that long-term return is, because you're not going to capture it. You see that in, you know, fund flows and how much of a mutual fund returns investors actually get versus the total return of those funds, for example. And cover call is a good example, you know, another one of the ways to think about it. It's okay, how do I lower my overall risk but still get market-like or better returns? And therefore, I'm getting much better risk-adjusted returns, right? Because if you can get the same return but with lower volatility, everyone's going to take that. And in many instances, that's kind of what cover calls really bring you. Now, you're right. At times, it can underperform. This is a good, especially trending markets. And this year, obviously, has been a very trending market. It's a very, very top-heavy market, et cetera. And it can limit limit gains in really, really good years. But more often than not, most years are not these amazing, consistently trending higher years like we've seen for the last 2 years, right? You typically get choppier environments and more bouts of volatility. And in those instances, you get a much better performance from a cover call type of strategy. For example, I'll give you an example. 2022, S&P was down, you can use round numbers roughly. S&P was down about 20%. NASDAQ was around 33%. If you go look at most covered call strategies, they were down single digits or so. Ours was down low single digits for most clients. And so you might say, well, you know, that's 1 year, but you avoid major drawdowns. And for a lot of people, especially pre-retirees, retirees, that is very attractive. That's very attractive. But then good years, you might not get the full return of the market. But remember that, I always use the math, if you're down 33%, you have to go up 50% to get back to even. Let me repeat that. You're down 33%, you have to then go back up 50% to get back to even. Now, a lot of people, you know, they're okay with that type of volatility, and they know over time, you know, it's going to get come back, and you're going to have potentially higher long-term returns. But that's not always the case, right? And so covered calls, they sound like this great thing in concept, as a concept. And in practice, they're good if executed well, but they're not a panacea. And it can be better to buy individual stocks, but it also can be better to do it on an index. It just depends on the subset of individual stocks and their performance. It's not, there's no, I can't make a blanket statement because I don't know what subset of stocks you're talking about. Okay, so I know that was kind of a long answer, but hopefully it gave you a good understanding of how to think about covered call strategies. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, and over on our YouTube channel as well. So I encourage you to head over there and leave a question in the comment section. And we got one of those earlier today. Doyle Thompson says, any thoughts on Dow Chemical, D-O-W? I have a 2% position. I'm wondering if it would be a good time to add more. Ooh, this is in a strong, strong downtrend. Relative strength is at 12. Yikes, that is not very good. At a 52-week low here. And the chemical industry in general is struggling a bit. The issue with Dow, if I remember correctly, is not just the earnings trends. They made nearly $9 per share in 2021. But this year, they're supposed to only earn $2.03. The earnings are supposed to rebound next year, but those estimates keep coming down as well. And if I look at the amount of debt on their balance sheet, $16 billion in debt, that's kind of a lot, definitely a lot. And their payout ratio is 184%. Their cash dividend payout ratio is 284%. This dividend, you're probably chasing the dividend of 7%. This is a perfect example of a value trap. This dividend is going to get cut. And this stock will tank on that dividend cut. Now, then it might be a good buy. But with the current trends in the earnings, the amount of debt it has on its balance sheet, the trends in free cash flow, it had in March, in the first quarter of 2022, it had $6.5 billion in free cash flow. Trailing 12 months, they're at $691 million. And it looks like it's headed to negative. And when you have this much debt and then negative free cash flow, that's when the market starts freaking out about a potential for bankruptcy. And guess what? In that instance, there's no dividend and there's no value to the stock. So two things need to happen. There needs to be a dividend cut. That's going to happen. And the market's pricing that. And that's why it's in such a free fall. So I wouldn't be buying this, okay? At least until that dividend cut. And then I would reassess it and say, can they return to free cash flow growth? If I have faith they can, then maybe it would be a good buy. But at this point, no, I'm passing on Dow Chemical. I would not add it. In fact, I would just sell it and move on until that dividend cut and then reassess it. Thanks for the call. Now let's keep things moving and swing back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
I just had a simple question about how best to analyze an ETF to decide whether or not to buy. I get some of the ratios you want to look at for individual companies, but some of them don't directly apply. So I'm wondering what translates and what doesn't into analyzing an ETF. Would love to hear you guys answer. Look forward to it. Bye.
That's a great question. It's very different than analyzing an individual company. Now, broad risk and things like that, though, that's pretty similar, right? Buying a large cap fund, you know, that's going to be similar risk to a large cap stock and small cap, et cetera. But, you know, these ETFs, and there's a lot of different types of ETFs. You know, you have ETFs that buy just equities, others that buy just bonds, others that buy both, others that run covered call strategies, others that run commodity type strategies. There is just so much out there. So first off, you have to understand what asset slice you are investing in. Now, for simplicity's sake, I'll just use equity ETFs because these are tend to be the most popular. The first thing you want to look at is the expense ratio. Okay, so what kind of costs are you paying when you're owning that ETF? Some of them are very low, but there can be ones that are high as well. Then you go to the type of risk historically that it has. Volatility, is it aggressive, moderate, conservative, et cetera. And then you're looking at, once again, a risk-adjusted return. So things like the alpha, the Sharpe ratio, standard deviation, those, and comparing them to others that you're looking at. And then I want to look at the portfolio composition. You know, what sector weightings are they? Is it overweight in one particular type of company or one particular company, right? Or a couple companies. Yeah. A famous example is like XLE, which is the energy ETF. Excuse me. Those are very top heavy. That one's very top heavy with Exxon and Chevron. And so you have high concentration in those two names. So what's the concentration within the portfolio? And then the quality of the names, you know, the financial health, the profitability, the growth, et cetera, return on invested capital, all these things that, you know, you can find over at Morningstar. There's other avenues to gather this data as well. So those are the ways to look at it. And then how does that fit in your overall portfolio? What type of other exposure do you have within this space? Are there a lot of overlapping positions, right? So if you own a tech ETF, for example, but then you own the SPY, well, you're going to own a lot of tech in the S&P 500, right, with the SPY, because it's all Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Amazon, Meta, Tesla, Alphabet, Broadcom. Those are the top nine names. And so there's a lot of overlap there. So you have to think about it in context to your overall portfolio weighting. So it's a very different way to look at these type of funds. And I'm glad you're asking that question, because the ETFs can be a good fit for a lot of people, but it's not fit for everybody. Let's talk a little bit about liquidity of your positions. And we just saw that big sell-off yesterday. And this is a good reminder of, you know, that liquidity is, a lot of people take it for granted. And over the last decade or so, the problems with liquidity have increased. Why is that? Crowded trades. There are a lot of momentum-driven strategies. There are a lot of quant-based strategies that are crowded into similar trades. I use the example of right now, there's a lot of very high-quality companies, businesses that have good profitability, good balance sheets, et cetera, that are just trading at insane prices. Prices that you would typically see for, you know, sexy AI names or cloud computing names, software names that have high growth rates and you know, trading at 50, 60, 70 times earnings. But there's a lot of just normal everyday companies that are great businesses, but trading at extremely high multiples. And I think a lot of that's driven by that quant investing, by momentum investing, that it doesn't care about the fundamentals anymore. And that's certainly true in a lot of cases in the market today, is that a lot of money is flowing either through indexing or these type of trades, or type of strategies, excuse me, that completely ignore the underlying quality of the business, or sorry, fundamentals of the business, the value of the business. And so I think we're getting to peak allocation in these type of names. And it's going to be very interesting. It's okay, who is going to step in? For example, typically value investors will step in to names that are selling off. But if names are selling off from extremely high valuations, who's going to step in and buy until it gets very cheap? So this is a liquidity problem that most people don't feel until there is some sort of reversal, because there's not that natural buyer, okay, that says, okay, it's trading at 25 times earnings. It sells off 20%. Now it's trading at 20 times earnings. You know, that's getting back to a market multiple, and you know, for a good business, that might be a good value, and you have value investors kind of stepping in. But if something's trading at 50, 60, 70 times earnings, it starts to sell off 20%. Well, it's still way overvalued, even at 40 times earnings. And so the types of popular investment styles has made the market less liquid, because they're the only ones in those type of names. They're the only ones that want to buy those names at those types of multiples because they don't care about the valuation. And so you can easily see liquidity pick up dramatically and gains that feel really good disappear really quick. And so I wanted to highlight this because it's a very important concept to understand as we head into a period that likely is going to bring more market volatility. So my answer here is, don't be complacent. Get ahead of it. Sell before you get this type of, I don't want to say sell, rebalance. That's a sound risk management strategy. It's not selling all of it. Most people don't think of it that way. They think sell or hold. No, rebalance is just as important. And you want to do that, well, things look good and feel good. When you feel the best about a position, that's often a time you do need to at least rebalance. So this inconsistent liquidity is likely, over the long term, going to damage investor sentiment. And you can use it to your advantage by taking advantage when there is major market sell-offs. But also get ahead of it so that you aren't a victim of that lack of liquidity. Now we're heading into a quick break. I'm ready for your calls right now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, here's another question from our InvestTalk YouTube channel. CJM says, what are your thoughts on IONQ and QBTS? I want to enter long position. Good entry point for each. Now, these are both in the quantum computing space. IONQ is IONQ. It develops trapped ion quantum computers for the purpose of commercial, industrial, and academic applications. And Google just had a breakthrough in quantum computing. I don't know much about quantum computing, frankly. So I'm not a great person to ask about this. These are speculative names. They both lose money. You know, they're kind of like biotech companies. Which one's going to be the winner? Or maybe neither of them, right? Just because they're public doesn't mean that they're actually going to be the ones that make the breakthrough. And, you know, will a Google surpass, you know, what they do, for example? So this is just speculation. If you want to, I would say buy both, or buy the one you have the most confidence in. Now, both are egregiously overvalued, right? $8 billion for IonQ. And then the other one was a little over $1 billion for companies that don't make money and very limited revenue. But it's not going to matter if one of them hits it big, right? It's going to be hundreds of billions of dollars and you're going to have huge returns. Now, what I will say is these type of names tend to go up around hype. This has already gone. IONQ has gone from $5 back in September to $37 now. You want to buy after that run? Probably not. You want to buy when, you know, the hype dies down a little bit. You You know, this had a run 2022 low around $3, went all the way up to 20, and then once again pulled back to 5. So you're going to get that level of volatility. Just keep on your watch list and then buy probably when it makes another, you know, 80, 90% drop from here back down to 5, 6, 7 bucks. That's where you want to buy it. Let's squeeze in one more fresh listener question now.
Hi, I'm calling about One Oak, OKE. Wondering if now is a good time to pick some more of it up or if I should wait for another opportunity. I'll be listening on your show. Thanks so much for all the good information.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, looking at One Oak, OKE. It's a name we've owned for clients for a long period of time. If you bought it in the 50s, 60s, can't remember. Exactly, but it's now at $97. Now, that's pulled back. It had a big bump post-Trump election win, and it moved from around these levels all the way to a high of 117. Now, it's back to 97. So, it's back to the 100-day moving average. Over the long term, that's kind of been good support. Now, you had a big move up. I could easily see this moving back into the high 80s. But this is the area where you want to pick it up. And what they do is they own pipelines that move oil and natural gas from the shale regions in the Rocky Mountains into the refineries and into places where it can be shipped and moved. And so they collect a toll for what is moved through their pipelines. And as the growth in the Permian continues, then you continue to see OKE do very well. Earnings in 2017 were $1.65. Well, next year, earnings are supposed to be $5.96, up another 17% from this year's $5.11. So we still find it to be a very quality business and great cash flow. And one of those dividends, this is a good example. A lot of people are chasing MLPs, but this is has a similar business to a lot of MLPs, you know, midstream pipelines, but they pay qualified dividends. So you might get an MLP yielding 6, 7, 8%, but this pays about 4%, which a lot of people don't get excited about, but we do because it's a qualified dividend and they certainly can continue to pay it based on their cash flow and earnings. So we like OKE and continue to give it a thumbs up. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. It completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime in iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. We love those reviews. And remember, if you need help as we head into 2025, understanding the risk in your portfolio, how did you feel yesterday? How do you feel about your portfolio with the new Trump administration, et cetera. If you need a second opinion, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.